Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest TeachNet podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Liana Archambault from Arizona State University. Liana, you're very welcome.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to take a moment to introduce myself. I am an assistant professor currently at Arizona State University. It's in the southwestern United States, so very much in the desert climate, mm-hmm. a lot of saguaro cactus and mountains. And I have a background in education. I was also a sixth grade teacher before getting into higher education. I taught sixth grade English and reading for a number of years, and always had a love of technology, and actually got into technology because there was a grant program that gave teachers a laptop back in the late 90s. And I found that I loved using that laptop in my teaching. I was helping my next door neighbor teachers help them use their laptops. And so then when I went back to get my master's degree, technology was something that I wanted to study and learn more about. And then got involved in a grant project while I was working on my master's and decided to keep going and pursue my PhD in educational technology. And so I'm a graduate from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And then I've been here at Arizona State. This is my fourth year at Arizona State.
Fantastic. And I think for all those teachers who are out there that are listening, The journey from the classroom into the master's and now into higher education is one that that I presume you've enjoyed.
Yes, very much so. I've always loved teaching. I've wanted to be a teacher since I was a 5-year-old girl and mm-hmm. was asked, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" Came from a long line. My mom is a teacher. My grandfather was a teacher and also a principal of an elementary school. So it was kind of in my blood, so to speak.
Very good.
And I loved, while I loved working with 11 and 12-year-olds in that age range and did that for a number of years, I really fell in love with helping my classroom, my colleagues and my neighbors. And I was just kind of doing that on the side because that's part of my personality.
Sure.
And it wasn't until I had gotten into my master's that I realized that professional development was really a calling for me.
That strikes one when I looked at your own research. And one of the main reasons why I wanted to speak with you on the TeachNet podcast, because TeachNet does a significant amount of work in the whole area of teacher CPD. And it was struck me with the amount of topics that you've covered both in your teaching and in your research are ones that would be really of interest to teachers, practicing teachers.
Yes, and especially I remember the area that I've been most recently involved with is getting is how to help teachers prepare for the online and blended, what we call in the U.S. blended mm-hmm. teaching, so a combination of online teaching together with face-to-face teaching. And really seeing this, I found myself challenged. So I was asked to teach an undergraduate course while I was doing my doctoral work, and it was the technology and education course. And they had asked this online, and here I was. I had a lot of background in technology, and I didn't have the first clue as to where to start.
Sure.
So I really knew if I was struggling with this, and this was a growing area, that this is something that I wanted to pursue, and I did through my dissertation and my doctoral work.
Very good. Just tell us briefly a little bit about Arizona State. It obviously has a large teacher education program, and then you might just give us the title of your own dissertation, and then we'll move on to talk about what you teach today.
Okay. Arizona State University is an extremely large university in the United States. So I believe we have over 60,000 students. And we are the largest teachers college in the United States.
My goodness.
And we are doing a lot of reform movements now, which is quite interesting. So mm-hmm. we're kind of on the cutting edge. Teacher education has come under criticism here in the United States. And so some of the requirements that we're changing is to move from a year-long student teaching experience to, from a semester-long student teaching experience to a year-long internship.
Right.
And also to move more toward content area courses that are developed. So, for example, I'm working on a project right now developing a course through the Center for Sustainable Health, and we're developing a course called Sustainability Science for Teachers. So it's scientists working together with educators and trying to put more content courses and develop those together with education faculty and content area faculty, since we have such a wealth of expertise here.
Sure.
And then my dissertation, I looked at the characteristics and knowledge of online teachers. So I did a national survey of online teachers throughout the United States. Mm. I had 25 states represented, so a pretty good cross-section,
sure.
And almost 600 online teachers who responded to my survey, and looking at their characteristics, their demographic, who they were, what was their journey getting into online education, and where they felt that they were strongest in terms of pedagogy, content, or technology, and how they had been prepared through their teacher education programs.
Very interesting. And did you see any commonality in the characteristics among these teachers?
We did. They were predominantly female, which is indicative of the teaching population.
Yes.
And they were very highly educated. So they had a higher degree of master's degrees than a norm or a just regular teaching or traditional teaching. So they had an average of 14 years of classroom experience. So these were not my kind of hypothesis was these were going to be younger teachers.
Yes.
Who had just come out of programs, and I found the opposite. These were very seasoned teachers, they were getting into it for a variety of reasons. Some were retirees,
yes.
So who had taught maybe 30 years in the traditional classroom and wanted to have a little bit more flexibility in their retirement, were looking for something that could kind of, you know, fit in line with being able to travel. Others were stay-at-home moms, so they had young children at home and wanted to have the flexibility of being able to have a career but still raise a family. So it was quite interesting to look at the characteristics. And in case anyone is interested, that article, I would be happy to provide you with a copy, but it was published in the Journal of Research on Technology and Education.
Fantastic. And you might just talk to us. Online learning and online teaching or virtual education is quite a new concept here in Ireland. I happen to be on the board of one of the only online K-12 schools in Ireland. It's iSchool. So you might just talk to us a little bit about what you see as an online school, and maybe just a little bit on some of the work and some of the research that you have been doing in that area.
Okay, well, it's going to be very U.S.-centric, because that's where
fine.
My focus
that's fine. Yeah, no,
has
no.
been.
Yeah.
Online education is continuing to grow in the United States. So, the Keeping Pace report kind of documents the growth, and it's exponentially each year has been growing to the point where we now have all 50 states that offer some form of online learning to their students. We also have states such as Michigan, New Mexico, Indiana just passed a law that are requiring an online course as a high school requirement for their students, because they see this form of learning as something that is important to experience for students and something that's very relevant for the 21st century. And so with that growth and with different populations, different student populations, kind of interested in online education. So you might have students who need to take an online course to be able to graduate. So they need to kind of recover credits. You might have a student who's very gifted and wants to move beyond, and perhaps there's not an advanced placement course in a particular subject offered at their school. You might have student athletes or students who are ill, who aren't able to physically attend school. And so I think that online education first represents the wave of the future in terms of the field of education as a whole, but also meets the needs, meets a variety of needs of students and their families. And I think that it's becoming a more known choice, and that more families are making that choice for their students. I know that my own son, who is going into seventh grade, so he's 12, we're applying to a program out of Stanford University that is an online high school for seventh grade. And it's quite an extensive application process.
Yes.
But we're excited that he's going to be, hopefully he'll be able to be in this format, because I think that he has some special needs.
Sure.
And I think that it would work well for him.
And then going back to the college and to the university and the School of Education, what do you see then are the challenges facing you and your colleagues in preparing the future teachers and maybe those in the profession who are returning to do masters and PhDs to teach and to organise learning in a meaningful way in these online environments?
I think that one of the big challenges that I've had is that I've been a bit of a crusader in this topic, and I actually have to kind of do a little bit of advocacy among my colleagues to say that online learning is a legitimate form of learning, that we have several meta-analyses that show that students do as well as, if not better in some cases, in online education. And I just finished a study, and it was of teacher education programs looking at who's doing field placements in,
yes,
in virtual settings. And it astounded me, some of the open-ended comments that we got back, that online learning is not learning, and that we need to focus on teaching real students in real schools. And so there is this attitude, and that was, that's a segment of the population, but
sure,
there is this
sure
attitude kind of embedded that it's a very kind of outdated model of what education looks like. And we are still, I think, for the most part, teacher education programs are still focused in on the four-wall classroom.
Yes.
And that increasingly that's not going to be the case. And so I've kind of had to wage a little bit of my own kind of crusade among my colleagues in doing this. However, I will say that from my administration, I've been very supported in terms of me developing content and coursework in order to address these needs for teachers.
Yes.
I think for the teacher side of things, I think that they really need help first with their skills with using technology,
mm-hmm,
and how to use that technology to transform their content.
Yes.
I think that's one of the kind of the online pedagogy, how to essentially reduce students' reliance on text.
Yes, yes.
How to promote engagement in the online environment. How to foster communication among classmates as well as, between themselves and the students.
Yes.
How to help students be more self-regulated. These are all areas that teachers kind of instinctively, I think, know how to do in the face-to-face classroom. And they know principles of good teaching, which I think transcend the environment, whether it's face-to-face or online.
Yes.
But they need to know how they're implemented in the online world.
Yes. And I suppose you've touched on it there, this notion of the knowledge that the teachers need to teach, the content knowledge, the pedagogical knowledge. And I note that you've done quite a lot of work in that area.
Yes, that was one of the things. I was the first person to kind of take this notion of the framework that Mishra and Kaler developed, which is the technological pedagogical content knowledge. So the idea that you need basically that what teachers need to know and be able to do is a blend of knowing their content very well, knowing their pedagogy, and then also knowing how technology transforms both of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they built on Shulman's notion of pedagogical content knowledge, which I love.
Yes.
I love the idea that teachers know how to transform content to make it understandable to students.
Yes. Yes.
They instinctively know the misconceptions that students might run into and how to address those, and they know the building blocks, kind of the scope and sequence of topics, and
yes.
how to build on each topic in order to get to that overall understanding. And Mishra and Kaler added technology kind of as a component. Although I like that framework.
Yes.
I think that lacking something else, it fits really well. And the reason that I like it is that those were the issues that I saw as I was delving into the literature
sure.
in terms of what it takes to be a good online instructor.
Yes.
And really, those are the three domains
yes.
that teachers need to be very skilled and knowledgeable in order to be successful.
And Leanna, are there any other frameworks out there in that space that you think come close, or is TPAC kind of out on its own?
The constructivist knowledge, a constructivist approach,
mm-hmm.
I think is a good one. It kind of gave way to technology or to TPAC.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like best about TPAC is it keeps that content,
yes.
the focus on the content.
Yes.
And
no.
that's what I think was lacking with this notion of what does it mean to be a constructivist teacher, to have students kind of construct meaning from the instruction.
Sure.
What was lacking there was a focus on content. And I think that, and I have been a little bit critical of TPAC only because it represents a measurement problem. I think it's a good conceptual framework.
Yes.
I don't think that it's, theoretically, we've had some measurement issues with it, and that's some of the things that I've written about. When you go to try to test this and see that it exists, there are some problems. But I do champion it because I think that content is so paramount to what teachers do on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's how I came across your work was because I had some issues myself with how we measure teacher knowledge. But anyway, we won't get into that today. The other thing I noted when I was looking at some of your research was some work that you've done in the area of STEM, science, technology and math, and the notion of signature pedagogies. Is that, again, building on Shulman's work?
I think it does come from a background in Shulman's work, and I do have to say that while I'm not a science teacher by background, the way that I got pulled into that was that my mentor was a science teacher, so which I fell in love with science, and I find myself kind of pulled into these projects and kind of wishing that I had a background in science education, but I think that. The signature pedagogy and focusing specifically on inquiry as a signature pedagogy within science.
Yes.
The reason that I like that pedagogy is because I think that learners are engaged by scientifically oriented questions.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to gather evidence and give priority to that evidence, and they want to formulate explanations in order to address the questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the internet can be a great way to facilitate that, gathering that evidence, making informed decisions, kind of evaluating the evidence based on our scientific understanding.
Sure.
Writing claims
mm-hmm.
that, compare what they've found to what scientists accept as valid argument.
Yes.
And then being able to justify their explanation. I think those are all critical skills going into the 21st century.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And I think some other work we were involved in here would echo that as well. And being able to defend and question and argue, I think, is so important. I suppose coming towards the end, time always beats us in these things. But looking forward and from where you are at the moment, what do you see are the challenges facing teachers into the future to integrate technology into their practice?
I think that time is always an issue for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We are placed with more and more responsibilities. And it's one of the things that I felt in the classroom. I think that it's even more true today. It's kind of feeling overwhelmed and how am I going to do this? And, it can at times feel like another add-on.
Yes.
And I think that teacher educators such as myself have work to do in order to help teachers be more efficient with their use of technology and to help them see that this can help not only transform their teaching practices, but also help their own productivity as well. So I think that's critical in moving forward, is to not see this as something as an add-on, but something that's transformative in nature.
And do you see it then in the context of the teacher as a professional, and going back to Shulman's idea of knowledge, do you see then that it's kind of incumbent on the profession to, for teachers in the profession to become lifelong learners and to constantly engage with learning themselves so that they are in a position to transform how they teach and to better meet the needs of the learners that either sit in the physical classrooms in front of them or those that they meet online virtually?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's part of the profession, as you mentioned. I think it is incumbent on teachers to see themselves as lifelong learners and to want to engender that in their students. And I think that we are the best models for our students. And so it's one of the things that I always wanted to model in my classroom was that I was a learner, and you know that there were moments where I didn't know something, sure, and kind of model, okay, what do I do when I'm not sure about something?
Yes.
So that we can try to encourage that behavior among our students, I think is key. And I think that this is an area that where we are heading. I think that blended classrooms, this kind of notion with my latest favorite metaphor that comes out of the Learning Futures Project, which I believe is based in the UK,
yes,
is this notion of classroom as base camp, where a genuine 21st century classroom should be a base camp rather than a single destination. It's somewhere that students can go,
yes,
where we check in, but that, and learning takes place, but then learning can also take place on the web. It can also take place at a museum or,
yes,
other informal learning opportunities. It also takes place at home,
yes,
and I think I really like that notion, and I'm looking forward to kind of exploring that more, because I think that the online world has kind of lacked a really good metaphor, and that is one that I've come across that I think the blended classroom, that makes so much sense to me. And helping students go out into the world and help them think like a scientist or a geographer,
yes,
or an entrepreneur. That's really what schooling is all about, or should be about, is the skills that they're going to need to be successful in their future professions.
Yes, I think that's a very good place to finish. Liana, it reminds me of a video, and I'm sure you know this one. It's from Kosen, Keith Kruger and his colleagues, Learning to Change, Changing to Learn.
Yes.
And a lot of those sentiments are captured in that video. People like Chris Deedy and Harvard and others, and Stephen Heppel and others are on that video. And they talk about, transforming the classroom and getting it to that idea of a base camp or a place where the students come and meet, but they're actually out learning, whether it's in the museums or on the street or in the park or wherever. And I think that's a very powerful metaphor for us to have in our minds going forward, that learning in today's society, particularly with the technologies that we have at our disposal, can actually redefine where and how we learn.
Most certainly.
So it's been a pleasure, and we'd like to thank you so much for joining us. We will put up with the notes for this podcast, we will put a link to your webpage at Arizona State University, which is extremely comprehensive. And we thank you again for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Michael. This was a pleasure.